Welcome to another episode of the Unveiling Grace podcast. My name is Lynn Wilder.
And I'm Michael Wilder, and we got another special episode. If you heard the last one, now you get to pick up this new one coming along here.
This is Vince Grinstead. He's telling his story. Vince, at the end of the last episode, was telling us that as a Mormon young man, he was invited to go see a Christian band called Third Day. And at that concert, he had a rather supernatural encounter with the Holy Spirit and gave his life to Jesus. Then started to prepare for a Mormon mission because really didn't know anything else. Welcome back, Vince. Very interesting, right, that you would have this encounter with God and now you're preparing to go to the temple and preparing to do a Mormon mission. Tell us about that.
Right. So, you know, I think some of, what really led me down that path, after being at that concert and having that undeniable experience, I spent a lot of time with my dad. We would fish. We even worked together, like I had mentioned, and I would ride to work with him. I would, I'd be with him at work on breaks. Like we were just really close. And I think I just thought I'm not going on a mission. I did too much. I just had too much of a past. It's okay. I'll just kind of move on. I'll try to find a good career, try to find myself a good Mormon girl. Right. That just wasn't working. I remember trying to date some people at church and I would go to the singles ward and that was interesting. Okay. But I was there and I just kept seeing people that I compared myself to them and said, that's not me. I can't be them. They were either in pre-med, pre-law. They just seemed like I won't say they seemed perfect, but to me, I was just I'm not them. That's not me. So I don't know. I struggled at the singles ward. But then my dad was still trying to coach me and kind of tell me, hey, it's fine. Cause he went on his mission later also.
Uh-huh.
That's something. So I think he had a little perspective of saying, hey, look, you can do this. It's fine. And so going to the, mentioning going to the temple, as I listened to Ashley's story a little bit more and talk with her a lot more openly about it, cause this is still kind of fresh for me. Leaving the LDS church. I mean, I say fresh, it's been 3 years now, when I had my name removed from the records of the church. But I got lost
and
just for a second.
Ashley is your wife.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry. So when I heard about Ashley's, when I listened to everything of hers and heard the situation that she had in the temple as we got sealed together, I know I'm jumping ahead, but when that happened, I had no idea of the just the terrible experience it was for her, because my experience was very unlike that, because I would, so we went to the Washington DC temple, would have been in probably near Christmas of 2003. And I had everybody I knew there, right? I had my grandmother, my grandfather on my dad's side, my grandmother, my grandfather on my mom's side. I had uncles, I had aunts. I mean, I probably had 20 people that I knew, have known all my life. So even looking back on it, there were things said, there were things that we did that I was like, oh, that was a little different, but I was raised in it. That stuff was not that crazy to me. It seemed a little bit more, do I want to say the word severe? I don't know. I guess it's just a little more, I don't know. But I was comfortable because I remember during times where I was like, wait, did they just, did they say that way? That seems a little bit off. But I would look to my right or look to my left and I saw people I knew and loved all my life. And they were smiling. They were happy. Nobody was looking around kind of being like, oh, this is weird. So I guess I was just kind of like, okay, so this is the temple. All right. And, you go into the celestial room afterwards and I mean, I've talked to, other friends recently about it and kind of said, when it comes to like some of the most beautiful places you could be, like on Earth that are man-made, it's hard to compare because, you go in that room and you're thinking, wow, it's completely peaceful, it's completely quiet. It's amazingly elegant and beautiful in the DC Temple anyway. I mean, I know they're renovating it now, so I don't know what it looks like now, but I know what it looked like then. And it just, you did kind of feel like, wow, okay, if God had a living room, this might be it. Like, but like that's my experience. And I just, but you have so much going on when you're getting ready for a mission. Like, you don't have a whole lot of time to sit there and kind of be like, well, what was that? Like, was that okay? It's kind of more like, okay, you have these checklists. You're like, okay, mm-hmm. I'm going to meet with the bishop. He's going to put in paperwork. I'm going to meet with the stake president. He's going to move on the paperwork. Like, and you start like, you just check, yeah. Like you're kind of just trying to check some boxes to make sure you can get there. Right.
Yeah.
So I guess there's just so much going on. I didn't have a lot of time to think like, well, is this okay? Like, I'm like, well, you got to do this. So we do it. Like,
yeah. It's interesting that you're talking about the Washington, D.C. temple is that's where Lynn and I went to the temple the first time. And that's where we were sealed as husband and wife in the D.C. temple. And it is a beautiful building. And the grounds there is just, it's really, really, you look at it and say, wow, just by looking at it, you say, well, this has to be a spiritual place. But I know as you're getting ready to go on your mission, you have all these boxes you're checking off, and the temple is one of the things you have going on. And the key point when you went to the temple, and I think they do this on purpose, they always try to surround you with close friends or family members that when you kind of look at some of the procedures in the endowment, and you kind of go, whoa, that is really, really weird. They're there. Right. No. You'll understand this more later on. You've got to go through the temple hundreds of times before you really begin to understand it. And you say, oh, okay, well, then I'll just let it swing on by. And then maybe I'll learn a little bit more next time and so forth. And so that's kind of way it was with us, but to a degree. But with us, it was not a good experience, either my wife or I, because again, we never had family members going with us. So it was, and being raised in Christian churches and so forth, a lot of things stuck out to us that seemed really weird. But anyway, well, that's our story. We'll get into that later on. So you get through the temple, okay? You go to the celestial room. We've been in that same room that you were in, okay? And again, I will admit, it is beautiful, okay? So anyway, pick it up from there.
So then you go from there, and like I said, you know, I go through Christmas, and every single gift I got was, mission related. You know, I had to get luggage, I had to get two suits. It was a whole procedure. I remember going to like a suit shop in the town my grandmother lived in, Charlottesville, not too far from here, and. I mean, it's so funny. Like my grandmother, she loved to shop anyway, but that day was totally different. Like she was in the zone and she was just like, you get anything. Like, oh yeah, this suit. Yeah. Get two of those. Like, oh, the shoes. Yeah. Get two of those. Like, it's like, she was just like in another zone. And like, so there's just a lot going on. Like I said, like I didn't have a lot of time to process anything from the temple, except for you made an excellent point, Michael, that if you say anything like, this is weird, or if anybody sees a face like that, they're like, hey, just don't worry about it. Like over time, it'll make more sense to you. Like more will be revealed later. And you're kind of like, okay, well, I've trusted you guys for the last 20 years of my life. Like,
yeah,
it must be okay. So like, you don't really think much of it. But like I said, a lot of stuff going on to try to get on the mission. You're trying to get money together. You try to just, I guess you kind of, I tried to figure out what am I going to do with my car? Like, so it's like just different things you're thinking about, And so I went on the, so I left to go on the 20th of January, 2004. First time I'd ever flown in my life. Right. And ended up in Utah where I'd never been before. Ended up in Provo. Really interesting thing. Like they didn't send, this is really side note that doesn't matter a lot, but it just, I was the only one coming from like Virginia, I guess. And like, the bus that was supposed to take me from the Salt Lake Airport to the Mission Training Center had already left for the day. And so I was just kind of left there. And this guy that was on the flight with me was coming back from Michigan. He was coming back from his mission. And luckily I talked to him on the flight and he was right next to me. And he said, "No worries, my mom will take you." So I remember going through like Carl Jr. out there, and she got me a meal, and then I went to the NTC. But see, so that was a great experience there, that little snippet of it. But the MTC stressed me out. I don't really know exactly why. Like, I don't know if it was just the weight of like I felt as if like you know, I don't know if it kind of was the same thing I felt when I was in the singles world. I was like, all these people just seem to be way above me, way ahead of me. Like, they know the Book of Mormon better. They know this better. They know that better. And I'm like, man, I don't. And then I guess there's this part of me that just felt like I couldn't do it. Like, and there was a time in the mission training that I was just like, I felt this anxiety and stress that just kind of said, maybe I should go home. Like, maybe I should just fold up now. Like, it'd be better to do that now. But like, you know, in there, it's not like you would just, I don't even know where I would have gone to talk to somebody like that, actually, to be honest with you, because it's not like I just had a companion that was there with me, that he was also going to Iowa. And so we were just kind of there together, and like, you just had a really strict, you know, schedule you followed. And like, you just went there and you did this and you did that. And like, you ate at this time and you had a little bit of time to play basketball here. And like, I think you're so busy with all that, that like, you don't have a lot of time except for at night when you're trying to sleep to think about what am I doing here? But I made it through all that, right? Made it through all that and got to Iowa. And my experience there as a missionary started off very interesting, just because the missionaries that were there, like my trainer, had been in the mission for like 18 months. And there were several missionaries that were going home that actually were from, they were from either Tonga or not Hawaii, but they were farther. Like, I think Tongan Islands is where a couple of them were from. They were celebrating going home. And I learned very quickly that people in Tonga celebrate differently than we do. But they ended up going and getting a pig from some farmer, and they actually slaughtered that pig on the mission and had a barbecue, right? But this happened before I got there. So I come in my first day in the mission, I come into an apartment, okay, in Iowa City, Iowa. And in that apartment, I walk in and I smelled it right when I walked in the door. I'm like, somebody was cooking something, but it doesn't smell good. And so as the day got on, I was like, of course, I was thinking like, hey, this place is supposed to be clean. Like, this is the Lord's apartment, right? Like, hey, we're supposed to be taking care of this place. And it was filthy. I was just like, what is going on right now? You know, so I was like, I spent that first day like cleaning up that barbecue from the pig. Like, they had messed up the bathtub, I guess, cutting up the meat. Like, there were like knife marks in the tub. Like, honestly, if you go back to that point, if somebody non-LDS had walked in there, they would have said, see, I told you, they're sacrificing people in here. Like, so then, because it looked like some scene of like a murder scene. And you're like, what? So it didn't start great for me. Let me just tell you. So like, already I was just kind of like, what have I done? And like,
So I have a question. I'm going to stop you here. What if you were saved at that third day concert? What if this discomfort that you've been feeling all along is conviction from the Spirit, this idea that I don't belong, right? This idea that, ooh, I just don't feel comfortable here. Did you have any other experiences on your mission that made you feel a little convicted or like maybe this wasn't for you?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There was later in my mission, so something that was brought up in, there's another podcast I listened to you guys, and they talked about the metrics of a mission, right? Where you like keep track of all the people you talk to, all the lessons you teach, how many invitations for baptism. Like, see, so when I came into the mission field, they released Preach My Gospel 6 months later. So they had kind of revamped the mm-hmm. whole missionary training and teaching and lessons. It was a lot different. And so at that point in time, I remember having a situation where people that I was working very closely with, and I felt very, very drawn to them. And like, you know, when I say that on my mission, I just didn't feel so determined to say, hey, I want to get these people baptized. I felt more determined to say, I want to talk to them about Jesus. I want to talk to them mm. about my like experience in my life of how I've overcome, you know, alcohol, overcome running away from my problems. And like, hey, you know, it's still something. So like, I did feel very uncomfortable many times with kind of like, hey, you know, you need to have that Book of Mormon in your hand. Like that needs to be extended to them. Like, hey, and like, you know, I'm not saying that I was just kind of like, well, I'm not doing that. Like, you know, I did it, but on the other side of it, I was okay if a person said no right off the bat. And then I'd say, hey, well, what church do you go to? You know, like I think sometimes my companion would be like, who cares? Like, who cares where they're going to church? But like, there were times where I went to other people's churches sometimes. I went to a Catholic service while I was there. I went to a Lutheran church while I was there. Like, I still wanted to make a connection with people. If they had nothing, no interest in Joseph Smith or the Book of Mormon, I was okay with that. And I was not really driven to say, let me convert people. Like, and I was not, like, I wouldn't say I was, like, when you talk about Mormon standards, I wasn't a successful missionary. But I had a situation where I had these people that, they said they wanted to be baptized. They had been investigating the church for a good long while, but the husband had a tough work schedule and, he was not able to get to church. So at that time in our mission, I can't remember if this was like a mandate that came down. I feel like it was. They said, before somebody gets baptized, they have to be at three consecutive church services before the baptism or it's not going to happen. And yeah. So
I remember that because yeah. I was a ward mission leader and yeah. a state missionary. And yeah, I remember all the rules had to be this way.
Yeah.
But what's amazing hearing your testimony, because I've talked to so many, having been a ward missionary and involved in working with a lot of missionaries, that so many of them, it was just about getting them to believe in Joseph, getting them to know that the church is true. But in your background, and I think it's probably because of that experience you had at that third day concert, it was Jesus was the most important thing. And right. a lot of times, and the people that, as you just said, you know, if they weren't interested in Joseph Smith, you were as excited to talk about Jesus. But absolutely. I bet your senior companion said no, and you would kind of exit out into a different direction. But that had to be hard on you. But your spirit internally was preaching Jesus, the gospel. And I think, you know, that's why you eventually left the LDS Church, because you saw you can only live that way a certain period of time, and you can't right. live two ways. You can't live for the LDS Church, and you can't live just for Jesus. You have to, you know, you could,
you
there's a
choose.
Conflict. Yeah. You
right.
have to choose
right.
between, mm-hmm. I don't want to say Joseph Smith and Jesus, but it's almost like that.
Right. No. And I think, so really when I kind of get down to it, I actually, not to like, you know, spoiler, but like I left my mission, like not when I was supposed to. So I ended up just kind of feeling a lot of pressure, a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety. Cause you know, you mentioned like, oh, well, I'm sure your senior companion like wouldn't let you talk like that. The funny thing was in my mission is that past my second companion. So I had one companion for 6 weeks, another companion for 6 weeks. Past that, I was basically a senior companion for the rest of my mission. Oh, and, wow. And I got like, I don't want to say I got put with like hard people to deal with, but I feel like I did. And so one situation in particular that I don't know how I didn't get sent home from my mission, honestly, because, you know, I talked about a pattern in my past of like how I run from my problems instead of facing them. And I was just didn't know how to deal with like the stress of this companion that I had. And like just the way that he like I guess his nonchalantness, like you said about like, you know, okay, well, if they're not interested in the Book of Mormon, let's go to the next house. And like, to me, I'm just kind of like, wait a minute, man. Like, we can make a connection to these people. Like, it doesn't have to be, you know, because like in my mind, I'm like, hey, we can plant seeds of love in Christ, whether it's the Book of Mormon doesn't have to be a part of it. Like, I mean, I knew the Book of Mormon. Don't get me wrong. I could teach from it. I could preach from it. But if they didn't want to, I'm like, okay, fine. What is on your mind right now? Like, what's like, I just wanted to make a connection. And so this guy was not, he didn't like that. I had a hard time with him. And one night I just let it get to me when I had a really big fight with the guy. And like, I just like left the apartment. Right. And I was like a senior companion district leader that time. I think I had keys to another apartment. I was just like, that was vacant. And I was like, I just like, I left there and it was like I was on cruise control. I went to a liquor store. Can you imagine going straight out of your like missionary clothes, just putting on like some sleepwear and just going to the liquor store as a missionary and then going to that vacant apartment and getting drunk? Like that happened. And like, so, and then after that, I was like, well, I'm going to be dishonored. And like, you know, it's going to be dishonorable. I'm going to get sent home. So instead, I was like, well, I'll just go ahead and drive home. So I sobered up a bit, got in the car, and just started driving it home. I started driving east, right? Because I was in Iowa and I lived in Virginia. And my tire actually popped and got flat at the Illinois border. Okay. I was like into Illinois. And then I was like, well, I don't know what to do now because I didn't even know if I had a spare tire. But at that time, I stopped and I called the mission president from a payphone. And he said, well, put the spare tire on and drive to the mission home. And I thought, well, this is happening. I'm going home now. But I didn't. Like, he sat me down. He prayed with me. He talked with me. And I stayed on my mission, believe it or not. But after that, though, it was not very – so that would have been probably, like, somewhere in my, like 13th or 14th month of being in the mission. And then in my, 18th month, I became, like a zone leader. And was in a whole nother town than that one that I wreaked havoc on that one night. But I was at the end of my mission base. I was at like 21 and a half months. And I had a brand new companion I was training. And I noticed like he just kept talking about home. Like he said, oh, that's so cool. You're going to be home soon. What are you going to do? Where are you going to work? What are you going to do? And like I was still feeling that stress and that pressure because I don't know. I just didn't feel like I fit in there anymore. I didn't feel like it was where I should be. And so I feel like that conviction, I didn't put a name to it at the time. So, I mean, this is really helpful for me to talk to you guys about this because it's just, I didn't put a name to it at the time, but I believe I was being convicted ever since that night. Like when I say I went and took that drink, like I feel like I was just trying to get out of it. I just wanted to get away out of that thing. And I thought, hey, if I get drunk and tell them, like, they're going to send me home, you know? Yeah. And then I can just say, well, I had problems in the past. Like they knew about it, but they just said I repented and I'm good. But I really wasn't good. I just, and so I actually one night while my companion was sleeping, I got a few things together and I know this just sounds kind of wild, but I just took, I took the mission car and drove it all the way home. I just left him there and drove all the way home. And so when I came home, like I never really things just were not, I tried to kind of say, okay, well, it'll be okay. I can do this. But I knew everybody in the congregation knew I shouldn't be home yet. You know, people keep count of that stuff. And they're like, wait, he left in January. And like, now he's home before Thanksgiving. Like, that doesn't add up. Like, you know, so it's like, I just kind of felt like I just felt like I'd failed. I felt like a failure. I felt like I just, and so I think I just kind of tried for a little bit to like, you know, do church and stuff. And, but it just, didn't work. It just didn't work for me for very long. And I, ended up meeting a girl that was not a member of the church and, became very, you know, serious with her. And, but then that, you know, that ended up kind of like, you know, not working out and kind of trying to kind of move forward to kind of see where I'm at now. Timeline wise, I was using a lot, you know, I would use a lot more alcohol, marijuana, just to try to, I was really just trying to bury the guilt, bury the pain that I just kind of had been hiding for so long, just that I'm not good enough, you know? And so in 2008, I remember kind of being at a point where I was pretty broken. Okay. I was living with my parents and I remember being, so that cousin I mentioned at Seventh-day Adventist, he invited me to go to a life group. Nowadays I'd call that a life group, but it was kind of a life group basically that he helped lead, and he would play some praise and worship. And I went to that a couple of times, and I was just like, hey, this is good. Like, hey, like this feels good. It took me back to that like 2002 concert where I'm like, hey, this is like real power. This has changed. I see light. Instead of feeling guilt and feeling like, hey, you're never going to measure up, like you're failing at being a Mormon and you're never going to be a good Mormon. And I just was like, well, but I'm supposed to be. That's what I am. I was always fighting that, and went with him a few times to that. And I remember meeting my wife in 2008 on the internet, believe it or not, but met her on the internet. She lived only 15 miles away from me. So it's not like it was a long distance. I knew her last name. I knew people from her family. So it was kind of it was like it felt comfortable to us anyway to kind of say, hey, maybe we should just meet.
So we are down to the end of the podcast. This is a perfect thing. So Vince gets saved, but doesn't really know about Christianity, doesn't really know the Bible, goes into a Mormon mission, feels uncomfortable, comes home early, wanders in the wilderness for a while, meets a girl on the internet. And that's where we're going to start next, because I can't wait to hear how your life comes back together and where things are now. Thank you for sharing with us. Grace and peace to you. Until next time.
And may God bless. Thank you.